I mean, Lane Kiffin says this all the time. Other coaches do too. They're right. Can you imagine in the NFL if coming down the stretch in December, 10 guys for the Cincinnati Bengals go, I'm declaring free agency today. I might still finish the season with the Bengals. Might not. But I'm going to go visit Dallas and Buffalo and New England this week. And I'll pick one. And I'll sign with them in January. And I'll start practicing with them. But now listen, in April, if I decide, hey, I went to Dallas and I don't like Dallas, I kind of look back and think Buffalo was cool. And by the way, Green Bay called. The NFL would go belly up. Fans would go, this is stupid. This is idiotic. I'm not doing it. I'm not paying for this. Mm-hmm. College is absolutely banking on a loyalty, love. That is what they're banking on. So I've said this is unsustainable. That people are going to start looking at this and going, this is dumb. This is beyond dumb. I'm not doing this. And I'm one of two things. I'm either incredibly wrong, and I'll admit it, I'm not a person that has any like emotional tie to any of the three schools that I went to. Just don't. So maybe I'm completely wrong. Or I'm early. We'll see.
All right, back again. Somehow I got you. Neil McCready. I apologize. Last time I called you McCready, but it's McCready.
It's one of those things that I've learned to answer to that name pretty much my entire life. My mother, Judy, she will correct people. I can remember she embarrassed the kids when they were little, when she would take them to carpool, and you know they'd yell, "Campbell McCready," and she would say, "It's McCready." I don't do that. I've accepted that it's going to be mispronounced.
Well, again, thank you so much. I think people really, really enjoyed the conversation we had last time. I love tuning in to everything you do with MPW Digital.
Thanks.
Rebel Grove. But I like it because there's so many people that I have in here, and not just me, but I know personally from other shows where, like, you know, it's good, but then you turn off the camera and it's like, that's when the good stuff comes out. That's when they really tell you how they feel. But from you, I mean, you're the same on as off. So it's always a really good conversation. I mean,
it's just sports, right? We're not solving world crises here. We're talking about football. There's really no point to be that guarded with football conversations, in my opinion.
Well,
and by the way, I'm a big fan of your work. I appreciate you having me.
Yeah, absolutely. Anytime. So I don't know if you how much you remember of last year's conversation, but I rewatched it last night just so I wouldn't repeat any of the same questions. But one thing was fabulous from what you said. We talked, remember this time last year, it was a lot of playoff or bust, and something really stuck from what you said. Historically, Ole Miss, if you asked 100 Ole Miss fans, we're going 9-3 this year, damn near everyone would say, so sign me up for that. And you said, if I asked 100 Ole Miss fans, would they take 9-3? You said, I don't know if we could get one that would take it.
Yeah.
And that's unfortunately what happened. Yet, I don't sense, now you would obviously know a lot better than I, but we have a ton of Ole Miss fans, and I don't sense any like true frustration. You know, Lane's got to go. That's kind of what I was anticipating if they missed the playoff. How surprised are you by that?
Not surprised. You know, I'm a big believer in two things can be true at once. And so, on one hand, I think disappointment is justified. Mm-hmm. That was a talented team. They had 11 players at the NFL scouting combine last month. That was a team that had a veteran quarterback who has a chance to go in the first round of the NFL draft. That was a team that had elite defensive linemen, one of whom will go in the first round of the NFL draft. The other will probably go in the second round. They have other guys. I mean, this was a team that will have a lot of guys hear their names called by NFL people here in late April. So it was a favorable schedule. They were one of the more talented top to bottom rosters. Everything was in their favor. And I think it's more than fair for fans to be frustrated that team didn't make the college football playoff when teams like Tennessee and SMU and did. I think it's more than fair. Now, on the flip side, I think you can look at last season and say there is a certain degree of proof of concept there that, yes, you can build a playoff caliber team at Ole Miss. And I think going 3-4 years back, that was up for grabs. That was up for debate. Could you truly build a playoff caliber roster at Ole Miss? That was a fair question to ask. And the answer emphatically was yes last year. Now, they didn't win the games. And you can go into some of those, and I'm sure we probably will. They lost a game in which I don't think they were prepared against Kentucky. They let a double-digit lead get away at LSU. And then they just didn't answer the bell appropriately at Florida with the playoffs on the line 2 weeks after they beat Georgia. So there's a lot there. But, no, I don't think fans should be, like, frustrated or calling for change or any of that. Disappointed? Sure. Absolutely. They should be disappointed. It was a team that was capable of going in, making the playoffs and probably going a long way in the playoffs. But they lost. Ole Miss fans get frustrated at me when I keep going back to, you know, I kept saying this after the Florida game last year. Yeah, you can make an argument for Ole Miss to make the playoff. But you can make an easy argument for Ole Miss not to make the playoffs. They lost to Kentucky at home. They lost to Kentucky at home. Someone goes, make the argument for Ole Miss not making the playoff. Okay, they lost to Kentucky at home. There's my argument. I'm done. And that's what got them. Mm-hmm. But if you can assemble that type of a team once, you can assemble that type of a team again. And so I do push back against people that go, that was the last best chance they'll ever have. There's no way to know that. There's no way to know that. Is that possibly true? Sure. Is that definitely true? Of course not. That's nothing but just negativity for the sake of negativity. If you can build that roster once, you can build it again.
Yeah, and certainly the playoff committee, that's one of the metrics they use is bad losses.
Yeah.
And Kentucky, if you substitute Kentucky for Georgia, they would have made the playoff, I think. They probably would have been the last team in.
Well, if you just win one of those games. Mm-hmm. If you just win one of those three games, you could have still lost to Kentucky and made it. But once you lost to Kentucky, you eliminated a lot of the margin for error. They could have – you just beat Kentucky, Michael. Just beat Kentucky. You could still lose at LSU. And, hell, you could go lose at Florida. And you'd still make it. They would have gotten in. Going into the season, the consensus was 10 wins get you in. And that proved to be true. Now, is that going to be true every year? I don't know. It was true last year, and we all thought it would be true, and it was. And, you know, Alabama almost got in with three losses, and I think that would have been controversial because I personally thought their loss at Oklahoma was disqualifying. I think if you combine them losing at Oklahoma and at Vanderbilt, it's disqualifying. They had no business in it. And had they gotten in, I think Ole Miss would have had a beef. But they didn't get in. And at the end of the day, did the committee get the best 12 teams? Absolutely not. Did the committee probably do its job the way that the thing was lined out to be done? I think so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's fair. Because of the three in the SEC that were debatable, I guess you'd say, Ole Miss, Alabama, and South Carolina, I favored South Carolina because they had won six straight. They beat the ACC champ yep. on the road. They were the hot team. But you could easily say, well, Ole Miss whooped them.
Yeah.
And that Alabama beat them.
The problem Carolina would have had in that debate is that Ole Miss went there.
Right.
And beat them by 24 points, 25, whatever it was.
Right. And I think.
I was there. It was a convincing win, you know.
I think Ole Miss even, didn't they fumble out the end zone? I mean, it should have been like
yeah,
30.
Juice Wells fumbled out of the end zone. Yeah, it was a
it
game.
It should have been 34-3.
It was a game that Ole Miss dominated. Right. You know, and that was the part. I think the part of the problem with the Kentucky game for Ole Miss was that if you watched the game, it wasn't fluky. Mm-hmm. Kentucky just kind of won. I don't think Ole Miss was prepared. I think they were distracted. I think that they were a little full of themselves after playing absolutely nobody in the first 4 weeks of the season. I mean, I've told this story. It's true. Ole Miss played at Wake Forest week 3 of the season, And I watched the first two series of the game. And then I just stopped. I quit watching. I just wrote, got done. I'm like, they're not even playing the same sport. And so for Ole Miss, they played three non-cons. I mean, the best team they played in the non-con, I think, was Georgia Southern. They weren't ready for Kentucky, and Kentucky had been battle-tested. Kentucky had played South Carolina, and Kentucky had played Georgia. Now, was Kentucky a good football team? It was not. But they were more prepared that day. And Ole Miss came in pretty cocky. I think if you watched them, you know, do the Walk of Champions that day, you saw it was a full-blown fashion show. They were focused on a lot of things that had nothing to do with football, and there was some stuff going on off the field that distracted, and they paid for it dearly. And there's a lesson to be learned there.
Yeah, I've heard you say that, and it's cliche to say, you know, the SEC, you got to come prepared every week.
It's not cliche. It's true.
Yeah, it's true. And it's, well, it's easy now. We're sitting here in March. Kentucky just went 4-8. They're awful. But
yeah,
that's not exactly who they were, you know, four games into the season. You
precisely.
Know?
That, and that's, you know, you have to have some nuance when you do that. But Kentucky was better that day than they were over the course of the rest of the season. But it still holds true. Look at the season we just watched. Nobody would say Arkansas was a great team. And Arkansas beat Tennessee at home. Tennessee went to the playoffs. I don't think anybody would say Vanderbilt was a great team. They beat Alabama. I watched Oklahoma play. I thought they were decidedly mediocre. They whipped Alabama. Destroyed them.
Mm-hmm.
You look around the league all year long, and you see that. And it's the challenge of the league. The people outside of the league don't like to acknowledge it. We're seeing that in basketball right now. But it doesn't mean it's not true. And just because the league didn't win a national championship doesn't mean it's not a dominant league. And the truth about the league is that with virtually no exceptions now, there's just no freebie. You have to be prepared. You've got to be focused. You cannot overlook an SEC opponent. And Ole Miss was overlooked Kentucky. I don't think there's any question. They were kind of looking ahead to South Carolina, to LSU. They had those games coming up. They had just destroyed the four teams they'd played. And I think they felt like they were a juggernaut. And in many ways, Michael, they were. But juggernauts get beat. You know, I mean, teams get beat. You saw what Ole Miss could be when Georgia came to town. Ole Miss dominated Georgia. Georgia doesn't get dominated. They might lose a game here and there, but Georgia doesn't get dominated by anybody. Ole Miss dominated Georgia. That was a whipping. You don't see that very often. And I think that, back to your first question, that has to be the frustration for Ole Miss. Had that game been a different game, I think people would have more readily accepted, well, this team had some flaws. This team wasn't as good as we thought. This team was overhyped. It wasn't. Now, they had flaws, and those flaws hurt them in some games. They were not as good up front as I think they thought they'd be on offense. And they missed Quinshon Judkins. I can remember you and me in this spot a year ago talking about Quinshon Judkins. And again, you go back to so far the theme of this interview, two things can be true at once. He was a giant pain in the ass who was a distraction, who was a threat to tear a team apart. No doubt. He was also a very good running back. Those are two true facts. And they made a decision that he was too big of a cancer, the people around him, and they moved on from it, and they couldn't quite replace him. And you can argue that one more first down at Kentucky, against Kentucky, one more first down at Florida, one more running play at LSU, and hell, they could have been 11-1, 12-0, but they weren't. And at the end of the day, you kind of, Andy Kennedy, the former Ole Miss basketball coach now at UAB, always says, at the end of the day, you are what your numbers say you are. He's right. At the end of the day, they lost three games. They played eight SEC games, and they lost three of them. Now, would they win those games if they played them a second time? Yeah, sure, but I'm not going to Hugh Freeze this. I mean, you know, Hugh Freeze did that after Auburn lost to Alabama, and he's like, well, if we played that team nine more times, well, guess what? You don't. And in the one game where they kept score, you lost. And so forever and ever and ever, you lost to Arkansas that year.
Mm-hmm.
It's the way it was the dumbest thing someone could say. It was completely tone deaf. And so I'm not going to be be the guy that goes, well, if you let Ole Miss replay those games, well, they don't get to replay the games. You know that going in. You know going in when the first person kicks the ball out of bounds, out of the end zone to start the clock at the 25-yard line, 15 minutes, and the snap starts and the clock starts, you know this is the game that counts, not the 9 hypothetical ones that may follow. No, this one. And Ole Miss lost 3 of those.
And how much of is that a failing on Kiffin, though, to not perhaps adapt to his team, especially because I know Tennessee got whipped in Ohio State. That's what people focus on. But I don't think Heupel gets enough credit outside of Tennessee to where, you know, he wants to be quarterback and high-flying, but he didn't have that. He had a great running back. He had a really good defense, and he relied on them last year, and that got him to the playoff.
Yeah.
And too many times last year, I think of LSU in particular, I think maybe the Florida game, if I'm remembering correctly, he's just so aggressive on fourth down, despite a dominant defense and a team that struggles in short yardage. Why in the hell are we going for every fourth and short? And they came up short so many times.
Yeah.
It's to me like he failed to adapt to the personnel last year.
I think the Florida game in particular sticks out in my mind, where there were times where they could have just taken 3 points.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and had they probably would have gotten out of there. But it's funny, no one does that on all the fourth downs that they convert. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
2 weeks earlier, though, against Georgia, they took the field goals and they won the game. And I think not doing it 2 weeks later, where all they had to do was win the game. They didn't have to win a fashion show. They didn't have to win a beauty contest. They didn't have to get style points. They just needed to score one more point than Florida. No matter how it ended, no matter how ugly, just one more point, and then go beat Mississippi State, and you're good. And they didn't do it. Will he learn from that? I don't know. I don't know if that's just not his DNA. You know, I think it's like, you know, your girlfriend, your wife. There's things about her that you love, and there's things about her that you just accept.
Mm-hmm.
And I think with Lane, there's a certain degree of gambling, and he uses the analytics and all that stuff. I think some of that just comes with Lane Kiffin. Is he going to grow his way out of that? I have no idea. I doubt it. I think that's just kind of who he is. And it's paid off for them on a number of occasions. I mean, you know, I can think of a game the year before at home against Arkansas. Jackson Dart had gotten banged up. Arkansas had just driven the field and taken a lead, I think, by 3, if I recall correctly, with like 12 minutes left. And Ole Miss got the ball back. It was 4th and 1 at their own 34. A lot of coaches would punt right there. Well, if you punt and they get it and they drive the field and score another touchdown, it's probably lights out. He went for it. And if he doesn't get it, right, and you give Arkansas a short field and then you lose to what was a bad Arkansas team, you don't live that down. That one hangs over you. But they got it. No one ever comes back and goes, man, that was gutsy. You know, that was a hell of a gamble, and that gamble paid off because they got the first down. They went down the field. They scored. Arkansas turned it over. They scored again. They win the game. Everyone goes home happy. I don't know that – I just think sometimes if you have a coach who's going to take chances, you have to be willing to live with the fact that sometimes when you gamble, you lose.
Mm-hmm. Now, I say all that harsh on Kiffin. I think given the year, you know, I think the stat is, and I think I credit you because I think you start saying this first, but over the last 4 years, I think they're the 3rd winningest program in the SEC.
Yeah.
And this is a damn good league. So it's, I mean, he's an elite coach.
That's my proof of concept thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Ole Miss in its history had won 10 games or more like once. Well, he's won 10, 11, and 10 in 3 of the last 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
Again, go back to how you started it. I mean, if you'd told an Ole Miss fan on Thanksgiving night of 2019, okay, Elijah Moore, the Egg Bowl, Matt Luke's fired, the whole deal. If you'd have said, hey, in the next five seasons, because one season's going to be goofy, in the next five seasons, there's going to be 3 years where you win 10 games or more. They would have, like, found a vein, asked for a blade, and signed it in dripping blood. They would have. And that's what they got. And now, you know, to his credit, the expectations are higher. You know, and that's good. You need high expectations. You want to, what's the expression, reach for the stars and maybe you'll grab the moon? You know, it's one of those things. Sure. But everybody else in the league tries too, Michael. I mean, you know, I mean, it's hard to get to 10 wins. And should they have gotten more than 10 last year? Yeah, of course. No doubt. But when people try to spin it as, oh, that's failure, or they're never going to get back there, I don't really follow that rationale. I mean, if you're guessing or that's your prediction, sure, but that's fine. But if you're saying, oh, that's as some statement of fact, that's silly.
Mm-hmm. And then again, to Ole Miss fans' credits, they've backed up again. That Ole Miss got another top portal class.
Yep,
they raided one of their, I don't know if you call it a rival, Arkansas, for sure. Most of their key players that went into the portal. Yeah. I mean, so again, they have, if you would have told me Ole Miss didn't make the playoff, I said, well, I don't think those fans are going to keep giving. But, I mean, they're close enough to where they keep chopping that wood. I think it's going to fall. But how competitive do you think Ole Miss will be with, I don't know if you've seen any of the stuff I put out or Bill Connolly, but I do my own returning production. And Ole Miss is dead last in the SEC.
Yeah, they lose a lot.
Offense and defense.
Lose a lot.
So this, I know the schedule on paper is friendly, but that's going to be a lot to overcome.
Oh, absolutely. There's no question about that. Look, there's a lot of excitement about Austin Simmons, and I get it. We'll talk about him in a minute, I'm sure. But I think Ole Miss fans, if they didn't already, and most of them did, in fairness, the overwhelming majority of them did, they didn't fully appreciate Jackson Dart. I think they're starting to. I mean, he went to the Senior Bowl, wowed everybody just like I kind of thought he would. Went to the Combine, looked great. His stock keeps rising. Incredibly charismatic. Natural-born leader. Tough as nails. Those kinds of quarterbacks don't grow on trees. They're hard to find. And the fact that he might go in the first round tells you that a lot of NFL people feel the same way, and you have to replace that. You have to replace all that experience, all that production. You've got to replace Jordan Watkins and Trey Wallace and Caden Priestcorn and Juice Wells. You've got to replace a lot of production. Ulysses Bentley IV is gone. That was a controversial thing last year, but he's gone. You have to replace a lot of playmaking and all of those things, and that will be difficult. And on defense, man, you got to replace that front. I mean, everybody talks about Walter Nolan, and they should, and Princely Amon Mielen. He was great last season, but so was J.J. Pegues, and so was Jared Ivey, who I think was one of the more underrated players in the league. You got to replace Poo Paul, who had a phenomenal season after transferring from Arkansas. You've got to replace Trey Amos, who's going – maybe late first, early second round as a lockdown corner. Even guys that no one talks about. Trey Washington played a lot of football for Ole Miss. 4, 5, 10 seasons. He was there forever. You got a bunch of those kind of people that you've got to replace. And no, that's not automatic. And so I'm with you. Look, I think it's going to be a good team. I think they're going to win a bunch of games. But that early part of the schedule, when people – fans do the, oh, that's a W, and that's a W, and that's a W. I kind of go, hold up. Yes, should at Kentucky be a W? Absolutely. Is it automatic? We just discussed that. Is Arkansas at home, should that be a W in September? Should. But they've got more returning people than you do. Now, you're better than them. But is it automatic? No. Is Tulane automatic? No, absolutely not. Those are games you have to play. And if they can survive those games, and for the record, I think they will. If they can survive those games, you get into that middle of the season, and then we'll find out, are you good enough? Lane Kiffin's very good at building teams. He's very good at replacing talent with new talent, figuring it out. He's got a interesting young quarterback who's got an immense skill set. But yeah, you got to replace all those people, and in this league, that sometimes is problematic.
That Tulane game scares me the most with Summerall. I know
sure.
I think his quarterback and his running back, he gets rated because he's G5 now. But that's a game where if you're Kentucky, if you're Auburn, you're saying, why are we not hiring this guy? You know, I mean, that's a game that gets him an SEC job. You know what I mean? I think Ole Miss will kill him probably, but.
But to your point, John's going to be an SEC coach. I mean, sooner rather than later.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, he'll come in there with, I'm sure he'll have a team prepared that day. He knows that there will be some eyeballs on it. And, you know, no one's expecting him to go win the game, but he could put an impressive product on the field. And if he does, some people will notice, obviously. And who knows whether that will be, you know, Kentucky or Arkansas or Mississippi State or wherever an opening might occur. He's going to be on people's list.
Mm-hmm. And maybe, unlike last year, where it was just Cupcake City, they're going to get fairly tested fairly quick. And, I mean, that could be a good thing because it seems like Kiffin always got his team early on. I mean, I think back even to the COVID year against Florida was really good.
Yeah.
They gave him a game at Alabama, I think.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, typically he's got them ready to go early. So I think there's going to be some growing pains. But I think this is an Ole Miss team where clearly you're not going to want to judge them by the first month. You know, I think they'll get better and better.
Well, and they're not going to have all that pressure hanging over them. This last team had a lot of pressure. I mean, all the Last Dance stuff. And
still, I laugh at that, and I laugh at after they lost to LSU. That was another reason I would not even consider Ole Miss for playoff, because every week they said it's playoff or bust, you're out. And I was like, it is. And they whooped Georgia's ass. All I heard after that was, it's playoff. Yeah. We're in the playoff now.
Yeah.
And then you lose to Florida. Okay, you're dead to me.
Yeah.
You know, because you were in the playoff, according to you.
Yeah.
And you just lost. So,
yeah. Well, everything after that just felt like spin. Right. You know, it was hard. And they're doing their job, right?
Right,
if you're
right.
Lane, you can't go. I mean, you can't stand up at the podium and go, no, we don't belong.
Right. But, oh, and even worse, I apologize to keep cutting you off. The worst, I mean, there was a lot of bad, but I don't want to go to the SEC championship.
I've talked to other coaches, so I'll just kind of give you the feeling from some other coaches that, you know, they don't want to be in it. And, you know, the risk to get a bye, the reward to get a bye versus the risk to get knocked out completely. I mean, that's a really big risk, just to get a bye. So, I think it's ended up being a very unique situation of all, you know, postseason sports, the way that system set up there and how you could go to that and get knocked out. And if you don't go, you're in.
Like, Jesus. What? I agree with him. I'm sure Sankey did not appreciate that. But he took care of that himself, didn't he?
He did. he did. But, you know, here's the thing about that. Everybody says, this drives me crazy. This is a media pet peeve of mine, mm-hmm. Okay? We want coaches and players to say stuff. We want them to be honest. And then when they are, we criticize them. He's right. He wasn't wrong. I mean, his point was, hey, if we can get to 10-2 and have a playoff spot wrapped up and not have to go play in Atlanta, let's do it. And sure enough, Michael, here's where we're headed. We're headed to a SEC play-in weekend and not an SEC championship.
Mm-hmm.
A year ago, Tulane, and I'm not the great Lane Kiffin defender, but a year ago, he's like, hey, we're not going to do a spring game. We're going to have a hot dog competition. We're going to play kickball and pin the tail on the donkey. And we're just, SEC Network says we have to have 2 hours of programming. So, sure. Here you go.
Mm-hmm.
Joey Chestnut, everybody. Well, guess what? A year later, everybody's doing it.
Yeah.
So sometimes I think Lane does some things that you can criticize, a lot of things. And I pin a lot of that Kentucky loss on him. But he also he's also ahead of the curve quite often. And he's not wrong about the SEC championship. I mean, if you're a 12-0, 11-1 team, and you're already in, the only thing that can happen to you in Atlanta that first weekend in December is bad. There's nothing good.
Yeah, I mean, Georgia may have won it all if Carson Beck didn't get hurt. But, see, I'll disagree with you. If it's Kirby saying that, I 100% everything you just said.
So what's the difference if the two?
Lane Kiffin's never even been to one. Ole Miss, to my knowledge, has never been to
the
SEC. They've
never been to the championship. There's no doubt.
You cannot say that.
And there are a lot of their fans that want that. I get it. That being said, if they had a playoff bid wrapped up,
mm-hmm.
and they go to Atlanta, and Jackson Dart gets hurt, was it worth it? No. Georgia probably wins the national title if Carson Beck doesn't snap his elbow on the final play of the first half in Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
They probably win the national title.
See, last year I thought it would have been awesome because I was at the SEC championship. It was a great game, but it was a very muted.
Yeah.
Those fans, they're passionate, of course. If you're there, they're excited, but before it was dead.
It doesn't make sense.
It should have been.
Everything is a build-up to playoff, 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 and then you play this game between two teams that are already in the playoffs. This is just for seeding.
Right.
Well, nationally, people look at that and go, no, that's, why do we like the NCAA tournament? We don't really like the NCAA tournament because we're obsessed with Creighton basketball, for God's sake. We like the tournament because the loser's done.
Mm-hmm.
We like the tournament because the winner advances to the next bracket. And so when we get the playoffs, we get these massive TV ratings because it's a bracket.
Mm-hmm.
You get a championship game where both teams are in the tournament. Yeah, people watch, but did they really care? Should they care? I mean, would Georgia have been better off just waving the white flag, sitting some starters, letting Texas have a title and get ready for the playoffs? You could argue that.
See, I think it would have been awesome, though, if it was Ole Miss, Alabama, and the winner goes to the playoff.
Sure.
Which is sort of what they're
proposing. It's what they're going to do.
And
had you told Lane, hey,
yeah,
here's what we're going to do in Atlanta. We're going to have Ole Miss play Alabama, and the winner gets this last spot. He just said, sign me up.
Mm-hmm.
This is awesome. Let's go to Atlanta. That's not what it was.
Right.
And so I kind of give him a lot of credit for, hey, guys like you and others are free to disagree, right, and think he's wrong. But and he very well might be. I don't know. It's a matter of opinion. But I understood his point. And from a strategic, technical standpoint, he was right.
You think Sankey called him after that, or does Sankey not even try anymore?
Well, I mean, so it's a conversation that they had, but like, he might have called him and said, I wish you wouldn't say that publicly.
Yeah.
But Lane would probably say, I'm speaking for others. I mean, others feel the same way.
Mm-hmm.
If you'd said to Eli Drinkwitz, hey, 10-2 and you're in, you want to go to Atlanta anyway? Probably say no.
Yeah.
If you'd told Kalen DeBoer, hey, you're in, you want to go to Atlanta anyway? Now we're good. Don't, you know, I mean, the goal is to win the national championship.
Right.
When you make everything about the playoffs, and I'm not saying it's a bad thing, but when you make everything about the playoffs, everything else pales in comparison. No one's going to look back and go, boy, that Big 12 championship game.
Right. What do you think of this proposed championship weekend where it's maybe 1 versus 8, 2 versus 7, or even 1 versus 2 for seeding, which is kind of lame.
SEC.
Have you seen that?
Yeah. They're
proposing all. I mean, again, they're likely going to 9, as long as they get the money. So are we talking a 10th SEC game before even the playoff?
I mean you're essentially making it a wild card game. You know. Again. There's a model to follow. The NFL has one. It works. Nobody ever takes the NFL playoffs and goes, man, that format sucks. So I don't know if there's a way to copy that, but I mean, I'm fine with turning Atlanta into 2 wild card games, you know, where you have 4 and potentially 5 slots in the playoff and 2 or 3 are automatic or whatever, or you're guaranteed 4, but you let this group of teams play for the last 2 of the guaranteed? Sure. Would people watch? Yeah. We'd talk about it. We'd build it up. We'd talk about it. The winner would advance. The loser would have to go play in some silly bowl game and half their seniors would probably opt out. It's fine. I mean, at some point, they're going to have to, what I don't like about the college football playoff is you've made the sport professional football. The players are getting paid a lot of money. So you've eliminated the whole, well, you know, this is interrupting their schoolwork or this is too many games. They're getting paid. So you have an NFL model, just follow it. It's right there. You're preparing guys to play in the NFL, so put them on an NFL calendar. Play, have an NFL playoff. Wild cards, divisional playoffs, conference championships, whatever, and have your version of the Super Bowl. I don't mind a 16-team playoff. I don't like automatic qualifiers. Just take the best 16 teams.
Mm-hmm.
I hate the stupid show every Tuesday in November with the ranking that comes out, and all of a sudden the same people that spent the whole year using the AP ranking, now we have to use this ranking
right.
because of a bunch of people that sit around in some room in Dallas. That's stupid. I don't need those people. It's totally unnecessary. I don't even watch the stupid show. It's a dumb show.
And have you heard Paul Feinbaum say, what is the value in that? Because they don't. It's not like it's a massive rate. The value in that is just people talking about it.
Yeah. It's just generating conversation.
And ESPN to get, you know, all their get take, all those shows to talk about it.
Yeah.
Well, can't that be done with a list? Like, why does it have to be a television program?
Well, why does it have to be a 30-minute television program?
Yeah.
You can put a list out. Yeah. Here's the list. Or is that necessary? I mean, what does it tell you? Now, if they tell you that your body of work matters, okay, well then a game in September has the same weight as a game in November. They need to specify, if they're wanting to do this quote right, end quote, here's the parameters. Everybody can look at it. Here's the formula. Everybody can look at it. Play the games. Spit it into a computer. Spit it out. Here it is. Don't need a committee. Oh, we had this really spirited debate about SMU. Well, thanks a lot. I don't care. And if you really want the debate to have merit, televise it. Put the debate on ESPN News for 3 hours. Let's let everybody hear it.
And that's the thing. I told you this on your show, and to my knowledge, it's 100% true. It's not even a debate. It is sort of a formula.
Yeah.
I don't know why they disguise it otherwise. I do it.
For drama?
I do it. And it's Dave Bartu. It's not me doing it. He puts it out. He puts it out on Sunday. And then right before the live show on Monday, because I don't want to ruin Dave's work, but like literally 5 minutes before, I say, here's his rankings, 1 through 14. And they do it on TV. It's
precisely
it's
that.
It's verbatim.
Yeah.
So he's from the future or he knows what they're doing. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So I never have understood that. And I guess it's for TV.
Right.
To fill programming.
Mm-hmm.
The same reason you have spring football games that coaches don't want to play.
Mm-hmm. How do we get back to that, though, with the spring games and all that? Because that's another thing I wanted to ask you. I've heard you and Siski, I love you guys' conversations. I mean, do we have to get rid of the spring portal? Or, I mean, is that even feasable with the lawsuits and all
that?
Well,
I mean, if you want to fix the calendar, you follow the NFL calendar. You have OTAs. You don't have spring football. Now the college coaches will tell you, well, we kind of need some spring practice because we do want to develop players.
Mm-hmm.
Yet most of them will admit you could do that in an OTA format. You have more time with them now than you've ever had before. You have all summer with them. I think there are too many portal windows.
Mm-hmm.
Yet the players win every lawsuit. Every lawsuit. So, yeah, you can say, okay, the portal window is going to be from this X to Y. But if a player in April says, I want to get in the portal, I don't know legally how you stop it. You get back to that same conversation that O'McCready and Siski, whenever Tyler starts talking about it, I pull out a match and light it and watch it burn. Just because we've talked about it so many times. But unless you can unionize the players and then collectively bargain an agreement, essentially, between the schools and the players that is legally enforceable, I don't know how you can have rules. because there's nothing a player's argument could be. I never agreed to that. He didn't. And the schools won't enforce it. And the schools could collude, mm-hmm. and they could enforce some of this and take some power back. Might lose in court. But everyone's too competitive for that. So instead, we have this free-for-all in December. I mean, Lane Kiffin says this all the time. Other coaches do too. They're right. Can you imagine in the NFL if coming down the stretch in December, 10 guys for the Cincinnati Bengals go, I'm declaring free agency today. I might still finish the season with the Bengals. Might not. But I'm going to go visit Dallas and Buffalo and New England this week. And I'll pick one. And I'll sign with them in January. And I'll start practicing with them. But now listen, in April, if I decide, hey, I went to Dallas and I don't like Dallas, I kind of look back and think Buffalo was cool. And by the way, Green Bay called. The NFL would go belly up. Fans would go, this is stupid. This is idiotic. I'm not doing it. I'm not paying for this.
Mm-hmm.
College is absolutely banking on a loyalty, love. That is what they're banking on. So I've said repeatedly, I've said this is unsustainable, that people are going to start looking at this and going, this is dumb. This is beyond dumb. I'm not doing this. And I'm one of two things. I'm either incredibly wrong, and I'll admit it, I'm not a person that has any like emotional tie to any of the three schools that I went to. Just don't. So maybe I'm completely wrong. Or I'm early. We'll see. Mm-hmm. I mean, I hope for the sake of my business and all the stuff that we do, I hope I'm really wrong. I hope that no matter how much stupidity is thrown into the game year over year, and Michael, we're throwing stupidity in. Like, you know that GIF where the little rascals are throwing the money out of the window? We're throwing stupidity just like by the handful, like out into the abyss going, here, let's try this. Let's see if we can, let's break it with this. All right, what about this? And then it doesn't break. Maybe it's not breakable. Maybe people love it so much. Maybe it is so ingrained in our culture that it's untouchable. But I do wonder, over time, when people go to a college game and they look at it and go, I have no idea who these people are. Does it start to go, and my team doesn't win. This is a lot of money. We're raising prices. I don't know if you paid any attention to it. At the end of the regular season in basketball at Arkansas, a bunch of their fans that are getting priced out tweeted from their last game, I think it was against Mississippi State, pictures of been coming here, sitting in these seats for 30 years. This was my last game. And I realized prices rise and sometimes things happen. But boy, you start pricing out the loyal, long-time college sports fan, you're playing with fire, I think.
Yeah.
But maybe not. Maybe there will be this group of people that will come in right behind it and go, hey, sorry, we'll buy those seats. We'll buy these corporate seats. And we'll, hey, I mean, because right now what's being asked of college fans? Hey, pay more for your tickets, right? Pay more for your tickets. Hey, we're going to, at Ole Miss, they're going to charge more to tailgate in the Grove. And I don't blame them. I'm not criticizing Ole Miss for that. I get it. But who's being asked to pay this? Fans. Oh, and by the way, contribute to the collective. And when you don't win, and someone bitches on my message board, I see it all the time. Someone will go, we should have won that game. We should have done this. And someone will inevitably come in and say, well, how much did you give to the Grove Collective? That's a hell of a note. It's always, should have paid more. Should have paid more. And then you don't know who the players are. As opposed to, and you make it pro sports, and you're competing against pro sports, where you do know who the players are, and the fans are asked to pay a lot of money up front, but you never keep going, hey, there's a linebacker in free agency. We'd like to get him. Let's pass the hat. No, you have a salary cap. You have, you know, that you have a completely different model that works NFL's still the king. And if you're playing pro sports and they're playing pro sports and their pro sport is better than your pro sport, people will typically migrate to the better sport. A lot of people go see the Chicago Cubs. Very few people go see the Iowa Cubs. And so I do think you have to be careful when you completely get away from a college model. That being said, that's where they're headed, and we're about to get into this rev share thing. And what's coming with the first step in the rev share thing that's going to be painful is all of these schools are going to look at it and go, let's go down to the minimum number of sports. They're going to start killing sports, which is going to take away opportunity. It's going to get coaches fired. There's going to be human pain. And I think it kind of sucks. But we got here. We got here way too fast. It was never supposed to be this. In 2020, when they said, hey, NIL, nobody was talking about $22 million rev share. But they were saying, hey, you know, if Alabama's selling a whole bunch of number five jerseys, there's a decent chance it's because people want to wear the jersey worn by number five, mm-hmm. and he should get paid for that. We've gotten completely away from that into just straight salary.
Well, Congress will fix it.
Yeah, the same Congress that fixes everything else. Yeah, yeah. I mean, I watched Trump's presidential address. I mean, half stand, half sit. I mean, you're telling me that group's going to solve college athletics? Stop.
Well, hey, speaking of loyalty, how loyal is Lane Kiffin, you think, to Ole Miss? And I think I've asked you this before, and I think this is the correct way to answer it because it's probably the most accurate, but that, you know, he's a guarded guy, and people that say they know what he's thinking, I think they're just guessing. But having said that, I mean, I heard wide and far, and I was right. I think we were on the same camp. He's not going to Florida. Ole Miss will be in a playoff chase. The timing is illogical, yet I heard far and wide he was going to Florida.
Yeah, I don't know, because at the end of the day, Florida didn't open up.
Right.
Right. So, you know, there's no way to know emphatically whether Lane Kiffin would or would not have gone to Florida, because the Florida job never opened.
Right.
The Auburn job opened, and he thought hard about it and has admitted that he thought hard about it. How loyal is he? Well, he's been there 6 years.
And now seemingly he's got all his family there, right?
I mean, just about. Almost literally everyone.
Yeah.
You know, his ex-wife is moving back. I think the plan is for Knox, his son, to enroll at Oxford High School. I think Knox will be a sophomore, maybe a freshman, one or the other. His daughter's, I guess, about to go into her third year at Ole Miss. He's got another daughter that plays volleyball at Southern Cal. Most of his family's there. You know, his parents moved there. Monty passed away last season. Oxford has proven to be a pretty good fit for Lane. It's a unique town in that it leaves people alone. You know, like I hear people talk about, boy, you know, certain coaches at certain places can't go out publicly. Lane is not a very public person, but if he wanted to go out publicly, he could. No one's going to bother him. Pretty much nobody will bother him. He's making a ton of money. It's like $9+ million. They've basically given him everything that he wants. The people in the athletic department have done everything. They've been over backwards to accommodate his request. He's assembled a very good support staff that's well paid. They wanted Pete Golding. They paid for Pete Golding. It's paid off. They have a strong collective that does everything it can to give Lane everything he wants. He's wildly popular. I mean, it sounds silly, but it's true. They've made his dog the mascot. How many other programs around the country? Florida's not going to let Juice Kiffin run out and be the mascot. Florida's going to have Al E. Gator and Alligator and all the other Gators. Maybe they'll dress Juice up in a crocodile costume and run him out. But at Ole Miss, they just put a light blue, you know, collar on him, and he runs out, and everybody's, you know, does his name. So I always say this about the loyalty thing. Are there places that he would go? Sure. But that Venn diagram is pretty small when you do places that would take him and all that comes with him and places that he would go to and that would pay him. You get that gets that that the shaded part of that Venn diagram, the overlapping part, is pretty small, Michael. And then people talk about the NFL. I mean, maybe, but the NFL's not really hiring college coaches right now. The NFL's hiring proven coordinators from winners and getting them to come in and install an offense or a defense and hire someone to do the other side of the ball. And that's the NFL model right now. Mm-hmm. Look around. Look who got the NFL vacancies. They weren't hiring Kirby Smart and Steve Sarkisian. They were hiring NFL people. Now, Lane's been in the NFL, but it's been a long time. So it's a cop-out answer, but like if you told me he left in 2 years, sure. If you told me he's still there in six, I totally believe it. Would I have believed that 4 years ago? Absolutely not. If you'd said, hey, is there a world where Lane Kiffin coaches at Ole Miss for 12 seasons? I would have said, no chance. Now, sure. Why not? Where's he going? Again, he's proven he can build a championship roster at Ole Miss. So he just has to go do it. And they're recruiting at a pretty high level right now. They're having more success with high school kids than they've had in the past, and they've proven year over year that they can be incredibly effective in the portal. People say, well, the portal's not going to be sustainable long term, and maybe they're right. I will give Lane this, and I think he learned this from Saban, he learned this from Pete Carroll. I do think he has a high degree of adaptability. You've seen that in not only with the offenses that he runs with completely different quarterbacks to the way that he has adapted the program in a short period of time. He deserves a lot of credit for when the game changed in 2021, 2022, with all the different things. He's rolled with it. He's been ahead of the curve. And there's no reason to think that he won't continue to do that as the game evolves, however it might evolve.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned Austin Simmons. What have you heard behind the scenes of how good he could be? Because I've heard people that have spoken to Lane, like Cole Kublik, you know, covering the games, where the feeling is, I mean, he could be, I'm not saying today, but he could be their best quarterback they've had.
Oh, I think there's a very realistic world where he's the best quarterback Lane's had.
Mm-hmm.
He's got to go prove it. And I'm not going to be the guy that goes just wild about one series against Georgia, though if you go back and watch that series, there's a lot there.
Mm-hmm.
Tons of arm talent, very athletic, very charismatic, strong leadership skills, incredibly bright. I mean, he checks all the boxes. Now you got to go do it, and you got to do it under pressure, and you've got to do it week after week. But I think the feeling is that he will. And you know, this offseason, let's be real, the tampering portal was active, and he had offers. And at some point, Ole Miss had a decision to make, and they clearly decided that he's the guy. Because Ole Miss could have said, in an alternate world, hey, look, you're going to have to come compete for the job. We're not going to coronate you here. That's what Lane always did with Jackson Dart, did it with Matt Corral. You got to win the job. Well, it's a new era, evolving. He could have been stubborn, and Austin Simmons could have gone for $3 million to another SEC school. No, that's not hypothetical. That's fact. And that was presented to Lane, and he goes, pay him. He's the guy. That's evolution. That's acknowledging, okay, well, we're going to have to do it differently now. I think he really likes the kid. Again, how effective can he be over the course of a SEC season and all of those things? You don't really know that until someone goes and does it. But in terms of having all of the check marks to be a great quarterback, he's got all of them.
Mm-hmm. And in this new model, do you think, and I'm not trying to be mean, but Mississippi State, especially Arkansas, if things don't change, and we know they probably will with the revenue share, but, I mean, there's no shot in hell they can compete, can they?
I don't know that I go quite that strong, but it's going to be difficult. You know, I mean, I saw Arkansas play twice last year. I saw him play at home against LSU, and I saw him play at home against Ole Miss, and they simply didn't have enough talent. Now, with RevShare and all those things, can they fix that? I don't know. I'm not there. They certainly appear to have a very strong plan in place for basketball and maybe for baseball, I guess. But they've got to address that with football. Does that change? Let's say this is a 5-7 season there, and it's the end for Sam Pittman. Do they address that with a new coach? I don't know. You know, they've been a little more reticent to jump into this world. Mississippi State's been even more reticent than Arkansas. They were not competitive last year at all. Does the rev share thing level the playing field for them? I guess it could. You know, I don't know that anybody really knows what this next model looks like when you have rev share and then you have, quote, NIL on top of rev share, supposedly governed by a third party that assesses values. What does that look like? Hey, man, your guess is as good as mine. And when people go, my deal with that is, who enforces that, right? If you call me today, okay? And by the way, if you'd like to do this, you can. I'm cool. I like Nashville. If you call me today and say, I'll pay you $2 million a year to come host programs on my YouTube channel, even if 100 other people in that sphere say, that's insane, right? If Josh Pate and all these other people say, Michael, that's insane. He's not worth that. If you think I'm worth that, how can a third party come in and go, no, not going to happen. You're not paying him $2 million. He's not worth it. Nobody put a gun to your head and made you offer me that. Same thing as in college football. Mm-hmm. If one school goes, we think this kid's worth $5 million. Here's a $5 million NIL deal on top of his rev share. Even if all the other schools go, this is insane. You're breaking the market. How can a third party come in and go, that's above and beyond what this player's worth? Says who? How? I mean, you can argue that the New York Mets are overpaying Juan Soto, right? It's easy. You have that argument. But the Mets value him at that number. So that's what he got. What's he worth? He's worth what he could get. I think that holds true in college sports at this stage. I don't think it's governable. So, you know, it's going to come down, I suppose, to who can have the most money, which, again, we go right back to fans. We're hitting up fans for more and more and more. And so let's say, pick a school, Tennessee, ends up paying, instead of $22 million, $32 million. And they win. The team that paid $22 million goes, well, if we want to win, we've got to raise $10 million more dollars every year. And you just keep doing the arms race, and at some point, people will say uncle, or they'll find the money. And so I guess, I don't know if I completely answered your question or if I got off the topic a little bit, but to me, the whole, how does someone compete? How does someone do, can Mississippi State compete? Yeah, if they decide financially to get in the game, sure. If Arkansas were to turn around, you mentioned them, they were to turn around and the Tysons and those people said, you know what? We really want to win in football. And John Summerall says, or Kane Womack or whoever, right? Says, I want the Arkansas job, but only if you have X million in NIL. And they go, okay, done. Is that enough to get them over the top? Could they win? Yeah, I mean, I think a kid would go to Arkansas for 1.75 before he would go to, you know, LSU for 800,000, probably. I mean, if the Blue Jays had offered Juan Soto $1 billion, he would have gone, right? And, you know, I mean, and in that world, people go, that's insane. Unless the Blue Jays went, well, that's what we think he's worth. At which point Juan Soto signs and it's his money. And he goes and plays in Toronto. But he's with the Mets. Why? Because the Mets offered him the most money. And there were teams that got out of it because they just said, this is an insane figure. Not, you know, with speaking of Major League Baseball, where you have the, you know, the labor agreement that's about to come up and no one knows exactly what the future is going to look like, what the next TV deal is going to look like. it's possible that 3 years from now, people will look back at what the Mets did and said that was total insanity. You wrecked your franchise. It's also possible they go win a world championship and they get a new labor deal and salaries explode and you look back and go, hey, that Soto deal was kind of a bargain. I don't know. It's good. That all of those things are going to happen with college football now because college football is pro sports.
Yeah. All right, last thing for you, Neil. Really appreciate your time. And this is a little bit of a loaded question, but I've asked you about Hugh Freeze before.
Okay.
And I know you have a background with him. You said you got no problem with him.
Yeah.
Good and bad, all that. But, I mean, it never ceases to amaze me. I can't stand the guy. I don't think he should be an SEC head coach. But, you know, if he does a good job, I'll say he does a good job. But I said some bad things last offseason on Jocks. They killed me. As I said, he's going to be on the hottest seat in the SEC. I think sticking with Peyton Thorne was a disaster.
Yeah.
And before the season, it was we're tight as can be. We're finishing each other's sentences. We're nonstop communication. Then the season gets here, and it just completely blows
beep,
up in his face.
Beep,
and it's everybody's
yep,
fault.
Yep.
It's not my fault.
Yep.
I believe it was on your program, even when Bo Wallace came on, said I would not send my son to go play for that. How in the hell is he recruiting after that? How does
well, he's recruiting with money?
I don't know how he's got it. I mean, I don't care what how much money. I mean, Ole Miss pays too, don't they? I mean,
he's always been a good high school recruiter. He's good with mama and all that stuff. He can sell that all shucks family BS.
Right.
You know, I'm with you. I think the seat's really hot. I don't think he can survive another mediocre season. I think they'll move on quickly. He has a pattern. He's followed the pattern for a long time, and I don't think he's going to change. It's not going to be his fault. It's always going to be somebody else's fault. But, you know, I've said this before, the NCAA thing at Ole Miss combined with the whatever happened with the massage therapist and stuff in Tampa and mm-hmm. all that saved mm-hmm. him. It saved him from being accountable for the program that he was blowing up in Oxford. Matt Luke ultimately paid the price for that. Now, Matt got paid a lot of money to pay the price. So good for Matt. Salt of the earth, wonderful person, made a ton of money, never had a chance at Ole Miss, if you think about it. Not arguing that he should have gotten more time, not doing that at all. Just simply pointing out he never really had a chance because he spent the first 2 years trying to clean up a mess. And because he was on Freeze's staff, it just was stale. But, you know, he did. He said, hey, Peyton Thorne's my guy. That was a decision he made, and it backfired. And we'll see what happens this season with his team. He recruited a very talented high school class. They had some flashes last season. But I'm with you. I'm skeptical. I don't think they're going to win big. And I think that media market's too big for him. And I would bet against them in 2025 just because, you know, lots of places are weird.
Yeah. Like,
you know, Auburn can be weird. And they have incredibly high expectations. Maybe too high, maybe not. But, again, that's kind of that if, you know, perception is local. If locally the perception is, hey, we should be a championship contender, it doesn't really matter what people in Nashville or Oxford think. If the feeling in Auburn is this should be a perennial contending team, then that's reality. That's what your expectation is. And I don't think he can fulfill that.
Yeah, and I think he may have added the worst quarterback possible. I like Jackson Arnold. I think he's very talented, but he's very turnover prone. He's a work in progress. Well, you're throwing in a work in progress where they need an instant –
yeah, because you got to go win right now. And, you know, I haven't looked at Auburn's schedule. I haven't studied it.
They open against at Baylor.
Yeah.
So, and nationally televised Friday night. I mean, the heat starts early if they drop that. And I think the fact that Alabama's dipped, if Alabama's good, which I think they'll probably be very good, then all of a sudden it's like, damn, we missed a window. Nick Saban was out.
Yeah.
We could have swung this thing. But I don't know. We could sit here and talk that all night long. You know what?
Yeah, it's and you know, someone has to lose. Like, you play all these games, someone's got to lose them. I mean, you know, is the joke in basketball, like, the league went 500 in league play. Well, the league's going to go 500 in league play again in football, too. So, you know, some people are going to lose, and when they lose at places like Auburn, when you can't get over the hump, it doesn't really – you can stand there and do all the justification and rationale that you want. You either win or you don't. And what would be interesting at Auburn, with all the money that they owe him – and all of the talk and the stuff that they did with him, if they decide to move on from him, the two things that would be interesting is who would truly want that job? That job's a little different now because you don't have the Saban albatross across the state. And there are some signs of Georgia, and when I say declining, I mean little in small increments, right? But there are signs that there's a crack or two in the armor at Georgia. Still strong armor. There's still a monster program. But there are some signs. There are some signs that they could slip a little. And I think that ratchets the pressure at Auburn. Like I think when Nick Saban was dominant and Kirby Smart was running Alabama East, you could be at Auburn and go, man, it's just a really rough period right here, right? Nobody could do it right now. These evil bastards on these two sides are just more than we can overcome. You know, it's just like the damn dark, the what do they call it in Star Wars? I'm not a Star Wars person.
The Sith and
the big star.
The Death Star.
The Death Star. You got Death Star here and a Death Star there, and you're just kind of caught in the middle in this like cosmic thing, and it's more than you can overcome. Like, you can't get through it because the stars just keep closing on you. But now, this star's like nowhere near as bright, and it's kind of shrunk, and parts of it are falling off. And over here, I mean, this Death Star looks like it might start to maybe need a new roof. You know, there's a little stuff. And I think that makes you have to go, okay, well, now's the time. We should be building our own Death Star. And Auburn has not been a Death Star. I mean, they lost to New Mexico State and Vanderbilt and Arkansas. I mean, they're not. They're nowhere close. And so all of a sudden, we're going to, but next season, we're going to be in the playoffs. And I do think, and I've said this on McCrady and Siskey, and Tyler disagrees, but now Tyler is pro coach. He loves coaches. Loves coaches. And that's fine, because, I mean, it's his business and the whole deal. I get it. I think it's playoffs or bust for Freeze. I think he has to either make the playoffs or be Ole Miss 2024 close, or I think he's gone. I think they'll move on. I think they'll look at it and go, this doesn't work. We've got to get somebody else in here, and they'll pick the new fresh thing and try to go. And I'll be curious to see in this era with rev share and all this stuff, just how attractive is the Auburn job? Because you'll start looking at jobs differently now and go, if I can build a championship roster here where the expectations are quasi-sane, or I can work to build a championship roster here where the expectations are we're supposed to beat the Chiefs. Which job do you want? I think you want the same one.
Right. Yeah, the only years Auburn does anything is the years they get Bama and Georgia at home. That's this year.
Yep. Oh, this is it.
If they don't do it, then that means 2 years.
This is it.
That's why you hire a new coach, so you can say year two is the year we take off.
And, well, you reset. Right. Because you go back to the fans and go, hey, we need more money. And the fans are like, I've poured money into that cat. It doesn't work. I'm out. You can get people excited with a new coach. We all like new. Everybody loves new. You go buy a new pair of shoes, you're so excited about your shoes. Right? 2 months later, they're just shoes. But that first few times, you're like, man, these are new shoes. I like the way these feel, right? And that's Freeze. The new is worn off. Now people have seen it, and he's thrown his quarterback under the bus. It was this guy's fault. He benched a quarterback. I think they lost the Arkansas game because he overreacted on Peyton Thorne. And they played the other kid who was clearly not ready.
He lost the whole quarterback room.
Yeah, I mean, it was you can't go all offseason and go, you're my guy, you're my guy. We're in this together, man. We're in this together. And then The first time there's some turbulence, hey, you're out. You suck. Next. And then that kid comes in, and he's terrible. And 2.5 quarters in, now you spend all week saying, no, this kid's really good, man. He's a great kid. Great mama. God, his mom. And then 2.5 quarters in, he's losing to Arkansas. And you're like, he sucks. You know, his mom's kind of big if you think about it. You know, I mean, that's just what he does. You gotta stick with somebody. You got to ride it out. Fairness to Lane Kiffin. Really, think about it. Was it 2020? Matt Corral, they go up to Arkansas, and Matt throws like 17 interceptions. And the first thing Lane does in that post-game press conference on the Zoom, Matt's our quarterback. Obviously, he can't throw that many interceptions. We got to fix it. But I just told him, he's my guy. He's my guy. And Matt Corral, from that day forward, was a damn good quarterback. He did the thing with Jackson Dart, where, hey, we're going to compete, and he brought in Spencer Sanders to piss him off and all that stuff. But Jackson was his guy. And by the end, man, I mean, he rode with him. And I don't know that Hugh has that capability. He rode with Bo Wallace those years, but, I mean, I can remember him blaming Bo for losses. And look, the whole Ole Miss stuff with Hugh Freeze never happens if Bo Wallace goes to Texas or Mississippi State. I mean, the truth is, Bo Wallace is someone that Hugh should have been incredible, like forever, forever loyal to, protective of. Period. Because Bo won a bunch of games for him with a wrecked shoulder. And yeah, no, but long answer to this question. It was a great question. I don't know how you go recruit when you have former players who have said that on the record. And you know everybody else took that show. I mean, we probably that was our post-game show after, yeah, like they played Georgia Southern or somebody. And who did Auburn lose to that day? They lost to somebody.
It may have been Oklahoma. I mean, there's many losses. Yeah, Arkansas, Oklahoma, one of them.
Maybe it was Arkansas. I don't,
Vanderbilt.
Yeah. It was one of the early ones.
Okay. It was probably Arkansas.
Maybe so. Whoever it was. You know, it was Peyton's fault, and that hit Bo the wrong way. And he comes on our show, and I'm sure that show was quite popular with competing football staffs. I'm sure that for 1 minute in time, a lot of coaches were like, you know, that McCrady, he's pretty good. I like that guy.
Well, speaking of that, before you go, can you tell the audience, where can they find shows like this? The post-game shows are outstanding. You do so many shows, some with Siski, some with Chase.
Yep.
They're all good. Where can the audience find them?
So we're on YouTube at MPW Digital. Also, same place for Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts, we're there. It's MPW Digital. You'll see the little blue wire thing in there. So that's us. It's got a big state of Mississippi emblem and MPW. And we have McCrady and Siski. In football season, it's Monday, Tuesday, and Thursday. We have Blue Sky Live every morning, which is an Ole Miss show, Monday through Thursday. We do Hand Raise Guys on Thursday afternoons. We do a lot of stuff, so check us out. That'd be awesome.
And then how about your social media? I know you don't post a ton, but still.
Yeah, I'm trying to post less because I get in trouble. People tell me.
Well, maybe you don't want to give it out.
People tell me that I should stick to sports. I'm not good at sticking to sports. Although I did really well on the last presidential address. I picked up my phone and my wife, Laura, said, don't. So I put it away. Tyler was actually texting me and I didn't even see it. The next day, he said, did you see it? I said, no, I put my phone away. He goes, well, that was smart. It was. But it's just my name, Neil McCrady, at on X.
Okay, thank you so much for coming in. This is fantastic.
Michael, as always, man, I enjoy being with you. You're terrific.
All right, perfect. Sorry to keep you so...